love to me.
So you want to gain the freshman 15? Well, you probably will. So why not gain it ethically? Sprouts, the student-run, not-for-profit grocery store, is now open in the lower level of the UBC Student Union Building across from Travel Cuts in the Wellness Center. Sprouts is committed to providing the UBC community with healthy, locally produced, organic, and fair trade products at great prices. Sprouts will be open from 9:30 to 6 p.m., Monday through Friday. So you want to tag a ride on the sustainable gravy train? Sprouts is now looking for volunteers to help out with tabling, outreach, and at the storefront. So just drop by and pick up your application.
CITR Podcast Update, number one.
Work has begun on Canada's Information Highway. That's the state-of-the-art network that we're told will change everything from the way we do business to the way we learn. Without getting too technical, tell me how what you're working on is different from what's available to me right now.
So right now, if you want to listen to your favorite CITR program, you need to be listening to it on your radio live or streaming over the internet live. But with CITR podcasts, you'll be able to download your favorite show and listen to it whenever you want on your computer or on your MP3 player.
CITR Podcast Update, number one.
Work has begun on Canada's Information Highway. That's the state-of-the-art network that we're told will change everything from the way we do business to the way we learn. Without getting too technical, tell me how what you're working on is different from what's available to me right now.
So right now, if you want to listen to your favorite CITR program, you need to be listening to it on your radio live or streaming over the internet live. But with CITR podcasts, you'll be able to download your favorite show and listen to it whenever you want on your computer or on your MP3 player.
I'm just thinking about that.
I know, it's pretty rad.
For more information, visit CITR.ca/podcast. Thank you for listening, and please be kind to robots.
Hi, this is William Shatner. Imagine a children's hospital network that boldly goes where none have gone before, and that's Shriners Hospitals for Children. Shriners Hospitals combine state-of-the-art research and teaching programs with world-class orthopedic burn, spinal cord injury, and cleft lip and palate medical care. At Shriners, tomorrow's medical care is here today. Call 1-800-361-7256 for more information. Shriners, having fun and helping kids.
Look at what's happened to me. I can't believe it myself. Suddenly I'm up on top of the world. It should have been somebody else.
Believe it or not, we're talking about sports. It's just me. CITR Sports. Please listen.
Second down and 18 for the Clan at throw 37. We got our streaker.
Here's the streaker.
Davies drops back. He's gonna throw.
Threw it.
Now he's gonna run with it. And the streaker, I think, got Simon Fraser a first down. And we got security getting after him. He's into the SAMU college.
He's into the end zone, and he's breakdancing in the end zone bare naked. He's being chased by security, and he's going for the hill. Security fell down.
Go!
Security is gone.
He's going for
the
hill.
Get on the fence.
Oh, he's going. Go, go.
He's going to make it out of here, folks. He's going to make it out of here bare naked.
He's got to climb the fence. There he goes. Oh, he's going to do it with the jump.
You gotta love it, folks!
Okay, everybody, welcome to Wieners Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. on a day where... Whoa! Are you there?
I'm here, baby.
Where are you right now? That's loud.
I'm in the casino, man. Can you hear the slot machines? I wanted to bring a little luck to your listeners.
Is it like $5 slot, quarter slots, Wheel of Fortune?
I'm in the penny section, actually.
You're in the penny section?
At a game that you'd actually like, Daryl. It's called Hex Breaker. And it says it can change your luck.
You are referring to my fantasy football beginning of the season as I lost two quarterbacks in week one. I lost Jeff Garcia in between week one and week two, and then on about the Friday before the Sunday game, I lost my fourth quarterback, my only remaining quarterback. What the hell was that, BJ?
That was the Hex Breaker cat meowing for you. Yeah, I think he may have changed your luck already, Daryl.
With us on the line, BJ Bass from Nevada, Las Vegas, from a true Las Vegas feel right now, live at the casino. What casino we at, Beach?
The Mirage. Beautiful Mirage Resort.
No monkeying around there. Beach, let's get into some NFL talk. Lots to get to on the show today. Starting it off, though, BJ, Seattle. Seattle, is it finally time? You know, we've been ripping them week one and week two. 33-30 losers to a not very good San Francisco 49er team at home. 0-2 start for Seattle. I guess the question flat out, BJ, is it the end of the line finally for the Seattle team winning this very mediocre NFC West?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think so, especially when you take into account how good Arizona has looked in their two games. Yeah, I definitely think it's the end. And you know, you look at the two recent pickups that the Seattle Seahawks did today. I mean, you know, when you're bringing Coren Robinson back to your team, you know you're in trouble.
And lots of injuries and, you know, hassle back. Julius Jones had a good day, but does look like the end of the road for the Seahawks. Other stories going on in week two in the National Football League. I didn't see a second of this game last night. I was at a movie. I was at Burn After Reading last night. But tell us about the Philly-Dallas game, which was just seemed like a wild, wild one.
Yeah, what a football game, and really, there the cat goes again. Really a great football game, and all that it was billed to be, you know, back and forth all night, very exciting plays on both sides of the ball, and really Dallas just was able to win the game, and Philly was not. I mean, rookie DeSean Jackson, Daryl, I don't know if you saw this play, where he started celebrating too early and actually fumbled the ball on a one, on a bomb, where, you know, he was running into the end zone. I mean, you know, there's little mental mistakes like that for Philadelphia. They ended up costing them the game. But, keep in mind, Reggie Brown is still out. Kevin Curtis is still out. Donovan McNabb's top two receivers. And McNabb played phenomenal. I mean, he really looks the healthiest he's been in some time. And I think that, you know, especially for you, Daryl, as an Eagles fan, you have to take a lot out of that game. I mean, you lose a game in division. Obviously, that sucks. It's a game you would have liked to have won. But you're on the road. You're in Dallas. And I think there was enough positives that Philadelphia can take from that game that they are a contender in the NFC. And listen, Dallas looked as good as they're supposed to be. I mean, they're definitely the clear favorite to come out of the NFC in the Super Bowl. Marion Barber missed a wide-open pass. Romo overthrew him on a very crucial third down. I mean, that could have been a play that left Philly back in that game. So, you know, Dallas has some things to change as well.
All right, a couple more things about last week. Got to mention Aaron Rodgers does it again for the Green Bay Packers. 24 for 38, 328 yards. No interceptions for Aaron Rodgers. What did he have here? He had, wow, you are going in there. He had the three touchdowns all in the first half. The Lions made it close, but you can't blame Aaron Rodgers and the offense. 48-25 winners. The Lions made it close. The Packers pulled away at the end. Aaron Rodgers, BJ, you got to say it, looking outstanding through 2 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely outstanding, and you know, guys heaving the ball up has great targets to throw the ball to, and you know, I mean, Green Bay is a team that is. You know, they were the youngest team in the league last year. Obviously, Brett Favre, you're still the youngest team in the league. I mean, this is definitely a team in a great position. And I mean, we, you know, we're going to see a Cowboys-Packers game coming up in the very near future that, you know, is definitely going to be a great Sunday night game next week.
Yeah, we'll get to that one when we start picking.
And you know, yep. Daryl, real quick, I mean, you know, the thing about Aaron Rodgers that really stands out to me more than anything else is, you know, you look at these young quarterbacks who get drafted, and you know, more now than ever before, they are being rushed into action, rushed into play. You look at Matt Leinart, Jamarcus Russell, you know, guys that might have talent but are playing very poor football. And then you look at Aaron Rodgers, who's kind of that old school, almost that Steve Young style, sit on the bench, learn from one of the greatest to ever play the position. And when you get a chance to come in, you know, you use all your talents, you use your skills that got you drafted, you add on to that what you've learned from the legend that held the spot previous to you, and you come out and you play great football. I mean, Aaron Rodgers sat on the bench for 3 seasons, and I think that, you know, if anything, this has to really, you know, give, you know, you look at Vince Young in Tennessee, everything that's taking place there. I mean, if you're a coach or you're a general manager of an NFL team, you really have to consider, you know, drafting these guys, much like Brady Quinn is, of being drafted and not expecting him to play for the first 2 years. I mean, these guys that sit on the bench just come out so much better and so much better prepared to play the NFL game.
And another team that pulled it out, Beej, let's talk about this team through 2 weeks, and then we'll get into making our picks. Colts, 18-15 winners over the Vikings. They're down 15-0 at one point in that game, late in the third quarter. Colts looking awful. They win it on an Adam Vinatieri field goal late. That almost seemed like a must-win for Indianapolis in a way, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, you know, we talked last week about, you know, how Indy just looked really rusty. And their timing was off, and you started to see that, especially in the second half of the game, of, you know, Manning being able to find Reggie Wayne, being able to find Anthony Gonzalez and get these guys on the ball, get them the ball in a position where they can make a play and you know, yards after the catch, as they say. So, you know, I think he slowly started to see that come together in the second half of the game. And listen, I think that was Minnesota's. You know, they got way too conservative when they had the lead. And once again, Tavares Jackson is simply not the answer at quarterback, at least not yet. You know, Brett Childress, I mean, he doesn't make a change here. I mean, you know, Minnesota, all the Super Bowl hype, all of a sudden they're 0-2. And they have a tough game this week against Carolina, who all of a sudden is 2-0 with two comeback victories. So, you know, you got to look, if you're Minnesota, at putting this guy back to the bench. You know, I don't know that handing the ball to Gus Frerotte is really that much of an answer. But Tavares Jackson has proven that he is not the guy to hang W's on this Minnesota Vikings stat sheet.
Okay, BJ, let's get into picking our winners. You get 5, I get 5. I will have official standings next week. Give it to me next week. I got all our picks written down here. I just got to crunch the numbers. You're winning, by the way. I'll give you that right now. Give us some games, BJ.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, you know, it's so tough. We've said this before, picking on Tuesday. Injuries are going to happen. Last week, I had the Saints with my money ball pick, and then Colson goes down with the injury. The other guys on defense, you know, a pick that I ended up backing off from. But, you know, I'm going to start with Buffalo and Oakland. And Oakland got out with the win. Buffalo's laying 9 points. Buffalo's 2-0. Oakland's 1-1. I really like Marshawn Lynch to be able to run the ball against Oakland. I you know, Justin Vargas went out with a groin injury. And Darren McFadden get, you know, tweaks an injury for the second time in 2 career games. The turf toe, something that's a little bit scary for any LaDainian Tomlinson owners out there. I like Buffalo in this one. They're giving them points. It's a little bit more than I'd like to give up, but I don't think that Oakland's going to be able to move the ball. I think that the Buffalo defense is going to stack the box and make Jamarcus Russell throw on them, and I don't think he's going to be able to do it. So I'll lay the 9 points, maybe hope for a special teams touchdown on Buffalo, and a little bit more than I'd like to lay, but I think Oakland, I mean, you got a feel for Lane Kiffin at this point. I mean, the guy wins the football game, and then the first answer he has to say in the press conference is, has he been fired? I mean, I think Oakland is going in the wrong direction, so I'm going to go with Buffalo -9.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on Buffalo on that one. Buffalo looking very good through 2 weeks, and yes, they only blew out a bad Seattle team, but they did beat Jacksonville on the weekend. Oakland, they beat a very bad Kansas City team. I'll stay with you there.
Another game I like, you know, the Cardinals are playing great football. Obviously, Washington came out. Jason Campbell threw the ball for over 300 yards this week. Looked very good against a very suspect New Orleans secondary. I don't think that Washington is going to be able to be that good throughout the season. I think Arizona's playing great. Bolden is inspired to earn that big money contract that his partner, Larry Fitzgerald, got. And like we talked about, with Warner at quarterback there, it's a totally different thing than with Liner. I like Arizona. The fact that I'm going to get 3 points on the road, I like that even better. Washington has got the home opener out from under their belt. I think there was some pressure on them to win because it was the home opener. I think Arizona's going to come in, and I think that they'll be able to win this football game outright.
I'll say Arizona just to be – I'll say Washington just to be different.
Just to be different. You know, a game we just talked about, Carolina-Minnesota. I don't really understand how Carolina's getting 3.5 points on the road. I mean, obviously it's on the road. Minnesota's a tough place to play, and Adrian Peterson could run that ball all day. But that being said, they're 2-0. Minnesota's 0-2, and I'm getting over a field goal. 3.5 points, I'm taking Carolina. I just don't see how I can go any other direction on that bet.
I'll disagree with you on that one, Beach. I thought Minnesota played very good. They just fell apart late versus the Colts. This is an absolute must-win game for the Minnesota Vikings. They lost to a very good Green Bay Packer team in Green Bay week one, Monday Night Football, and they hung in that game okay, although they lost that game. I still think Minnesota's legit. I'll take the Vikings over the Panthers.
You know what, Daryl? Every season in the NFL is a must-win game, and listen, we've seen teams start off this a lot worse than 0-2. I think Carolina just has something going for them and the ability to get done. So, yeah, I'll go the opposite direction with you. You know, we talked about Indianapolis. I really love to take Indy. -5.5 at home, less than a touchdown. I think that they're really coming together. But you know what? Just the same reason that you're taking Minnesota, Jacksonville's in a whole trouble. They're 0-2. This is an absolute must-win game, or they can kiss this division goodbye. They can't start 0-3. They're going to have to be competitive, and I can't depend on Colton Dungy to give me that touchdown victory when they'll probably win by a field goal. So I'm not going to bet that game. Instead, I'm going to go a game that I usually wouldn't touch. And I'm going to take the San Francisco 49ers -4 at home against Detroit. I think Detroit is self-exploding. Matt Millen has got to go. They need to make changes on that team. You know, John Kitna, like you said, I mean, they were in that game against Green Bay. I mean, they were winning that game by 1 point with 6 minutes left to go. And then Kitna throws back-to-back pick sixes. Game is blown wide open. I don't know how you could bet with Detroit. On the other side, you know, JT O'Sullivan. I mean, he looked good. He threw for over 300 yards. Frank Gore is, you know, a very solid running back, and I think San Francisco -4 makes a lot of sense to me. I think I'm going to make that my money ball bet this week as well.
I'll agree with you on San Francisco, Beach, and the other reason, they just got the big win in Seattle. This might be the biggest game San Francisco has played in like 3 or 4 years, so I'll take the 49ers at home.
I mean, you know, was there any more sloppy game than that San Francisco Seattle? It was unbelievable. I mean, like, the only way Seattle could get a first down was to have a punt blocked and then pick it up and run it for a first down. Unbelievable. My last game, I'm going to go with Monday night. You know, the Jets and the Chargers. Chargers are obviously off to a rough start at 0-2. You know, there was that terrible call by Ed Hockley where he ruled Jay Cutler on an incomplete pass where it's clearly a fumble. You got to love Shanahan going for two. You know, San Diego again, I mean, this is a team that cannot catch a break. You know, at any point in the last 5 years, even when Schottenheimer was there, you know, missing field goals in the playoffs, I mean, they just cannot catch a break. They get another rough one. They're 0-2. They need a victory very badly. That being said, you know, even though they're at home, 9 points seems like a lot to give Brett Favre and the New York Jets. You know, I think that Favre is going to end up throwing the ball downfield a lot more and playing a lot less possession football than he was against New England. I think New York can cover 9 points. I don't think they will win the game. I think San Diego needs that victory too badly and has too much talent to not get that first win. But I do think 9 points is simply too much.
I'll disagree with you, Beach. I'm not impressed with the Jets so far after two games. They barely beat the Dolphins week one. They only put up 10 points against the Patriots in week two. I am not sold on Brett Favre and the New York Jets. And say what you will about the Chargers, they've lost two games so far by a combined 3 points, one on the last play, one on a two-point conversion with 24 seconds to go. I think we might see a big game out of San Diego on Monday Night Football. So I'll take the Chargers.
Yeah, well, and, you know, listen, you know, the way you talk about Brett Favre, and obviously the guy's got the gunslinger mentality and he needs the arm. I think the thing that's hurting him more than anything else is obviously he just doesn't know the playbook. And he week. You know, look for that to continue. We saw Lavernius Coles finally get into the action a little bit. He had, was only targeted once in week one, caught no balls, was the leading receiver for the Jets this week, although it was only for three catches at 70-some-odd yards. But I think you're going to start to see Coles start to get better, Cautry start to get better, and, you know, Favre start to develop a rapport with these guys. And obviously, once he does that, it opens up the line. You know, Alan Faneca on that new offensive line for the Jets, and Thomas Jones starting to run the ball. You know, I like New York covering that. If you're giving me 9 points with Brett Favre, I'm going to have to take them.
There you go. My picks now: Philadelphia hosting Pittsburgh. Will be a great Pennsylvania football game battle in that one. The Eagles at home favored by the 3 points. Philadelphia blows out St. Louis week one, had that wild one versus Dallas last night. Pittsburgh looking awesome through two games, although they did only put up 10 games versus the Browns on Sunday, but that was in a very windy game. I will, however, take the Eagles to cover the 3 points at home.
You know, Daryl, you go right at those games that I would never touch with a 10-foot pole, and this is one of them. I mean, it's going to be a phenomenal football game, and I think that it's really going to answer some questions of is Philadelphia a legitimate contender, or are they not? And I think that this game is going to answer that question. You know, Pittsburgh only put up 10 points last week, or this week. That's all that they really needed to score. Obviously, weather was a factor. I am somewhat concerned about Roethlisberger's shoulder, but I think Pittsburgh is going to be very, very good. I think that what's going to end up hurting them is their strength of schedule, which is the worst in the NFL, and they have a very tough schedule this year. I think Pittsburgh is going to get out of this one with the win.
Okay, there we have it. My Moneyball pick this week, I don't know, I don't understand this line. The Houston Texans, so far in this season, you know, they get blown out by Pittsburgh week one. They don't play week two, of course, the big Hurricane Ike, so they can't play. But Tennessee, here's a team that's defeated Jacksonville, and is, you know, they destroyed Cincinnati last week. At home, Tennessee favored by 5. I think that's a real good bet for Tennessee. 2-0, looking to go 3-0 against a Houston team that's been blown out in their only game this year. I take Tennessee to cover that spread. That's my money pick of the week.
Yeah, and you know, Daryl, I mean, listen, Tennessee very well could be better with Kerry Collins at quarterback than they are with Vince Young at quarterback. And this will be a very interesting thing to follow. You know, Jeff Fisher came out and said, Kerry Collins is our quarterback until he plays poorly. Kind of benching Vince Young. So, you know, I agree with you. I think Tennessee's playing great football. I think Kerry Collins is going to be able to get it done. You know what? I'm actually not going to agree with you. I'm going to go with Houston only because, you know, they need to get a win under their belt. It was a team that was talked about having a lot of improvement and going to be able to get some W's this year and really, you know, be competitive in that division. Obviously not having an opportunity to play this week, I think it's something that's going to get them fired up. I think Tennessee wins the game. I think it's by a field goal.
Okay, another pick, Beach, is Atlanta. I'm going to go with the very bad Atlanta-Kansas City game. Atlanta at home favored by 5 points. Atlanta 0-2. They're 1-1, sorry. They got the big win versus Detroit week one. They got blown out by Tampa Bay last week. But they're taking on a Kansas City team that just lost to Oakland by a score of 23-8. They got blown out by the Raiders. The Raiders in that game ran for 300 yards. This is an Atlanta team. Well, Michael Turner week one ran for 220 yards on his own. You know, I'm not crazy about Atlanta, but when you're playing Kansas City at home and you're only giving up 5 points, they're bad against the run. You can run the ball. I'll take Atlanta to cover the spread.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I look for, you know, Michael Turner tweaked his ankle a little bit. If he's not 100%, they have Jarius Norwood there. I think they're going to run the football right at him. I'll agree with you. The reason that, you know, that I'm probably not going to put my money on it is I don't really like backing a rookie quarterback. But I'll tell you what, Matt Ryan, you know, looks like the real deal. It looks like he'll be able to develop into a really good quarterback in this league. And I'll agree with you on Atlanta.
Okay, a couple more picks for me right now. I'm going to go with my boy Joe Flacco and the Baltimore Ravens, -2, hosting the Cleveland Browns. You know, unfortunately, we've only got to see Baltimore one game, and they beat that very bad Cincinnati team. And the Browns, though, not looking good, although they did only lose to Pittsburgh by 4, but, you know, I'll take Baltimore -2 at home.
Yeah, and listen, Cleveland really wasn't in that game at any point. You know, if the weather isn't such a factor, that victory will buy a lot more than 4. That being said, I mean, Cleveland has too much talent to not be able to get a win on the board. You know, the same way that I think that off week helps Houston, I think it might actually hurt Baltimore a little bit. I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to go the other way from you.
Attaboy. All right, and my final pick, this is the fun one. New England at home favored by 12.5 versus the Miami Dolphins. You know, I hate to say it. I'd like to take Miami to cover this, but, you know, and you brought it up last week when I was praising them for the way they played against the Jets. Who knows what the score is in that game if the Jets have a field goal kicker throughout that game. Miami got blown out on the weekend, and I will take the Patriots to cover the 12.5.
Yeah, you know, Daryl, that actually might be the toughest line on the board because it seems like it's too much. It seems like it's too high, especially with Castle, a quarterback, and he's still unproven. But how can you possibly go Miami? I mean, you have to go with New England. They're so talented, and you know, it's a division game, and then, you know, they won by 9 this week. You look for them to win by even more next week. I have to agree with you. How could you pick Miami? I'm going to have to take New England and lay less than the 2 touchdowns.
All right, Beach, give us your fantasy picks of the week.
Oh.
Come on, you can do it.
Well, listen, you know, Michael Turner, Jarius Norwood, I would almost go with Jarius Norwood. I think he's going to pick up a lot of yards that he's not expected to. I think that they're going to be up in that game, and they're going to want Michael Turner to heal that ankle a little bit. So Jarius Norwood could be a sneaky flex play as a running back receiver there. I didn't even really look at it, to be honest with you, Darryl.
All right, well, I'm going to go with Carson Palmer this week to have a big week. I mean,
bounces back against the Giants.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. It's just you got to figure Carson Palmer's not going to do that 3 weeks in a row, no?
Yeah, you know, Kurt Warner could be an interesting play as well, a quarterback, just because, you know, I mean, he's been putting up such great numbers that, you know, it's Kurt Warner and the Cardinals. You're almost waiting for it to continue. But like we've talked about over the years, Daryl, it's a lot more effective to ride a winning streak rather than to bet against the winning streak to end. And Kurt Warner could be a solid play, a quarterback.
All right, we'll do a better job next week picking fantasy.
Yeah, we will.
Okay, BJ Bass from Nevada, Las Vegas, from the Mirage Sportsbooks. That's where we're at?
From the Mirage Casino. You're now allowed to use your phone in the sports book. Happy days, happy days.
All right. Thanks a lot, Beach.
All right, bye.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to Wiener's Barbecue. Well, you are on Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. I've just got the tired blues today. I don't know. I was up late watching DVDs last night, and yeah, that's it. That is my reason for being tired. Pretty lame, hey? Pretty, pretty, pretty lame. Saw that movie Burn After Reading last night, the Brad Pitt, George Clooney, Tilda Swinton, John Malkovich, the new Coen Brothers movie. Not bad. Not bad. I give it a thumbs up. I give it a worth seeing. I give it a very entertaining. I don't necessarily know, you know, if you got to rush to the theater to see it, might be a very fun rental, although I thought it was a pretty cool movie. Didn't love it. Didn't love it, but I definitely give it a solid B, B plus, you know, solid B. Yeah, it was kind of movie, though. Just so you know, if you do go see Burn After Reading, because this girl, when we were walking out after, I could hear her talking behind me, is she was saying how she kept waiting for something to happen, and it never did. And that's a Coen Brothers movie, though. You can't really get wrapped up in the plot. You just sort of have to watch it, watch the scene, watch the dialogue, watch the characters, and you'll have a good time. So that is my Burn After Reading movie review. All right, everybody. On the show today, you just heard BJ Bass from Nevada, Las Vegas. Just a couple more guests on the show for this afternoon. Julio Caravat, of course, from the BC Lions Radio Network, will be with us right after the break. He's been on at 5 o'clock lately, and we're sticking with that today. At 5:30, Tyler Noble from the CITR Sports Department will be with us. Lots to talk about in UBC Thunderbird Athletics this week. How about that football team? 28-0 winners over the undefeated defending CIS national champion Manitoba Bisons. Huge win. And SFU at BC Place beat Saskatchewan, the number 2 team in the country, also on the weekend. So two huge upsets there. And then I'm going to be playing an interview I did a long time ago with some Trailer Park Boy guys. I was trying to set up an interview with some Comedy Fest. You see this Comedy Fest thing coming to town, Luke? Couldn't get one. I got zipped. I got shut out. Anyways, folks, we're going to take a quick little break right now. When we're back, it'll be Julio Caravetta from the BC Lions Radio Network. You are listening to 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Hello! Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Hi, guys. My name is Hafsa, and I'm the Public Relations Officer for the International Relations Students Association, also known as IRSA. We have a mandate to provide students from a variety of disciplines with a forum for the discussion of international issues in a casual environment. Our discussions reflect upon all areas of international interest. In addition, a host of other activities, such as diplomatic simulations, academic publications, and conferences such as UBCME1, make IRSA the most active student group on campus and one of the most recognized throughout Canada. If you would like to join the club or get in touch for more information, please call 604-822-1604 or visit our website at irsa.ca.
Want to know what's going on around town? LiveMusicVancouver.com is the Lower Mainland's comprehensive source for live music listings. We've got more than 350 shows listed at any time, and our listings are updated continuously by hundreds of the very people who put on the shows you love. Artist information and MP3s are accessible right from the listings, as are maps and calendars for virtually every venue in the city. All this and tons more totally free at LiveMusicVancouver.com.
Better environmentally sound transportation invites you and your organization to take the commuter challenge. BEST is a local nonprofit charity dedicated to building healthy communities by promoting sustainable transportation. Year-round, BEST organizes events and programs that educate individuals on environmental issues and encourage viable solutions. In the first week of June this year, BEST run the commuter challenge. It's an event that encourages individuals to use cleaner modes of transportation for their commute to work and help improve air quality throughout Metro Vancouver. It's a fun competition between workplaces wherein employees utilize sustainable transportation options, such as cycling, walking, teleworking, taking transport, and car or van pooling. Last year, nearly 100 companies and over 40,000 people participated in the challenge. This year, we expect even more. Contact BEST at 604-669-2860 or CAM, at best.bc.ca for more information about signing up your faculty or organization in the 2008 Commuter Challenge. By making a small change, you can make a big difference.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to the show. With us on the line, from his home.
It's fine.
Julio, are you there?
Yeah.
You're home. You're playing with your daughters.
Yes, I am. Sorry, I can barely hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Are we good?
Yeah, we're good.
All right, time to start the interview. Here we go. With us on the line right now, Julio Caravana from the BC Lions Radio Network. And, you know, Julio, the Lions, 28-23 winners over Saskatchewan on Saturday night at BC Place. And, you know, Julio, correct me if I'm wrong, I thought the Montreal game was great, I believe, but that was more just a wild, nutty game. I thought that was the best game of the year.
Saskatchewan?
Yeah, the one on Saturday, yeah.
You know, Daryl, I will agree with you. I think it started slow, but I think that, you know, you got to respect the fact that both those defenses played so well. I think we most of the time want to see – we equate big numbers to a great game, like offensively.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, defensively, you saw two very, very good teams go at it on Saturday night. And – offensively, they were able to kind of put some points up on the board late and move the ball. But really early on, that game's dominated by the defenses. And, you know, if you like defensive football, you must have been thrilled with what you saw on Saturday night, because it was a hell of a contest, hard-hitting. You know, the one thing that jumps out at me is, as I think back to that game, is that quickness of the linebacking core of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Man, oh, man, were those three guys – Anton McKenzie and Maurice Lloyd and Sean Lucas, boy, they were all over the place making tackles. And you can see why McKenzie and Lucas were, I think at the time, two and three or tied for second in tackles in the league. And probably after Saturday's performance, they might be on top.
And, you know, Julio, you know, people have been writing about it. People have been talking about it. And I got that great view. And I got to hear you and Rick noting it all game long, just the play of Cam Wake on the weekend.
You know, you're absolutely right, Daryl. And I will say this, that for the first time since I've been broadcasting the games, and I can honestly say, like, for you know, defensive players, I try to watch as much as I can because, you know, you want to give them the necessary, you know, pub. You give them the notoriety and give them the press when they deserve it. But I found myself riveted to him towards the end of that game. Like, I wasn't worried about where the ball was going. I was just watching him because he was doing something on every single play that was just a marvel. I just couldn't believe how quick and how powerful and how relentless the guy was on every single play. It was just, for a guy who was the MVP last year defensively and the rookie of the year, and really, you know, he had a lot to play for this year, obviously trying to get his shot in the NFL. But, man, the effort that he puts forth on every single snap, it is fun to watch. And Saturday I was as riveted to one player as I've ever been just to see what he does next.
Saskatchewan, we'll get into next weekend's game, but just staying on Cam Wake right now, taking that to next weekend, the Saskatchewan, how do they game plan for this guy?
Well, I think that what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to game plan against him, right? And you could see what they were trying to do at times was to throw screens and throw quickly to try to get, you know, to try to get away from that pressure. That's what you try to do. Like, if you've got a front seven or a front four that are really getting after the quarterback, then what we used to call, you have to change the launch point or create multiple launch points, meaning that the quarterback had to move around and throw the ball from different spots in the field. Because if you didn't, and I mean by not only different spots, but like three-step drop, five-step drop, and three-step meaning you're going to get rid of the ball quickly, five-step you're holding on to a little bit longer, all those kinds of things to disrupt the flow of those guys rather than allowing them the opportunity to just kind of pin their ears back and come after you. And if you give them something else to think about, then that was the key. But you could see they were trying to do that, and it'll be interesting to see what they do against him because Daryl, you saw what I saw. They have to do something. I mean, he was changing the game himself towards the end just by his ability to rush the passer. You now have to keep a guy like Wes Cates in there to block, help block a guy like that. So it disrupts everything you do offensively when you have to contend with one guy. And you do have to contend for him because if you don't, he's going to kill you. And if you don't know where he is as an offensive player, and for receivers and everybody who are catching passes downfield, I mean, this guy is going to run after you. And if you're not aware of where he is, you're going to find out when his number is, you know, implanted on your chest.
Julio, what I loved about, you know, the Lions game on Saturday, and just thinking about it right now, going back to the Western Conference Final last year, you really got to see it in those two games. It was Saskatchewan's defensive line last year in the Western Final, and I thought it was BC's defensive line on Saturday. I mean, are these teams are they separated by which line is playing better on that day?
Well, you're right, Daryl. You're absolutely right, and you've hit it right on the head, and any coach will tell you that exact same thing. If you win the battle of the line of scrimmage, you're going to win the game. And really, it's something that every single week when I do my keys to the game, it could be the number one key. Every single week, because that is the most important. It doesn't matter how good your quarterback is. It doesn't matter how good your offense is. If you can't protect the quarterback and create holes for your running back and do those kinds of things, you're not going to be successful. There's just no quarterback out there that can just have guys running into his face and you expect him to be successful. So that's why there is such a huge pressure on the offensive line to create time for a quarterback. And it's pretty apparent, Daryl, that you look at the offensive line for the Lions. And did they give up a sack on Saturday?
I read two, but I don't remember two. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, I don't remember two either. But anyways, if that's the case, they've given up, what, two in three games?
Yeah.
And against that front, that's probably pretty good. So if you can protect your quarterback, look at what they've been able to do offensively.
And back to BC's quarterback, Julia. I thought Buck Pierce, you know, his number's pretty good, 18 for 33, 336, two touchdowns. But, Julio, I thought Buck, he struggled at times, but he hung in there, didn't make the dumb play, and then he got the big plays late, and he had a good game overall.
Yeah, you're right. He managed the game pretty well. And let's not forget, too, Rufus Skillen dropped, what, four passes?
Yeah, is he going to be on the team on Saturday?
Well, they released Khalil Hill today. Khalil Hill.
Yeah.
That's a hard one for me. Wally was pretty, he didn't want to, he's not going to jump all over Skillern. You know, he understands that sometimes that happens, and especially with Skillern and where he's made some huge progress in the last little while.
Okay. Yeah.
That he's not going to just all of a sudden, get rid of a good young receiver just because of one game. He it was unfortunate for Rufus. He struggled early on, and you could see he was battling his confidence. But they're pretty high on him. They like what they have in him. So, getting back to Buck, though, those drop passes, you know, think about where he would be if he would have been able to complete some of those passes. You know, that momentum starts to grow, and you start to move the ball a little bit. Those drops, though, all of a sudden they kill a drive. You're second and seven, the guy drops the ball, you're off the field. I thought that Buck really made some good adjustments late in the game, and those two long ones were absolutely perfect to both Giroy and Paris Jackson, and that was the turning point. Those were the big plays of the game.
Yeah, and Julia, you know, I got to bring this up, is people are kind of raving about Paris Jackson's game on the weekend. I keep that stat, Julia, how often they throw the ball to the guy, right?
Yeah.
You know, I keep that stat. Paris Jackson, six catches in that game, but he had the ball thrown to him 13 times in that game.
Yeah.
Giroy Simon, I hope I'm right of how rare this is, what he did on that day, Julio. You don't see this happen. He was throwing the ball seven times for 142 yards, had a touchdown. Julio, they threw him the ball seven times.
Yeah.
Every time.
That was a very good stat, by the way.
Why, thanks.
when you slid it to me. And you're right, it jumped out at me too right away. You don't often see that. But I think what it had to do more than anything, Daryl, is that the matchup that they had with Paris Jackson is one that they wanted to exploit.
Right.
And that's why you see a guy get 13 balls thrown his way, is usually because they like the matchup and they're going to try. And really, I think they were able to do something that a lot of teams don't do against Saskatchewan because they put such good pressure on, is exploit one of their weaknesses, and that's going over top. They're such an aggressive defense that and you can see it with all aggressive defenses. It used to be the same way with Montreal, and it used to be the same way with BC when we used to play pressure defense, is that the defenders in the backfield, I mean the defensive secondary, they sometimes start to cheat because they know their front people are so good that they're going to get to the quarterback, and that the quarterback has to get rid of the ball within about 2.5 seconds, because if he doesn't, he's going to get sacked or he's going to get pressured out of there and the play's dead. But in Saskatchewan's case, they are so aggressive, those guys in the back end, that the Lions exploited something where if you can get your quarterback the time and protect and throw the ball up, those guys are mismatched, and that matchup, Omar Morgan against Paris Jackson, is a mismatch, and they took advantage of it. They like that mismatch physically and the size, and they feel, hey, we're going to throw the ball up, and if we can, if Paris Jackson, we feel that he's got a better than 50-50 chance he's going to come down with it. So we'll keep taking that shot, and they did.
Cool. And last one on that game, Julio. So you mentioned the fact that BC, they're going to go over the top probably on the weekend. We'll get to that in a second. But you love that second down stat. And I forget what BC was. It wasn't that impressive. They were about 50%. Saskatchewan in that game, 4 for 20 on second down.
Yeah, well, that just goes to show you, doesn't it? If you're not converting on second down, you're not creating more first downs. And I don't know I don't know if we kept this, Darryl. You can maybe you tell me if we did or we didn't. But you know those long passes that he threw. Really, that was the only offense they had, and I don't know. They might have been on first down, or I don't know if they were part of the four that he converted. But he shouldn't have converted those either.
I'm good, but not that good, Julie.
Yeah, but you know what I'm trying to say,
yeah,
right? Like
yeah.
Those long ones that he completed, like one was in double coverage. Two of them actually were double covered, and Palmer and Dressler make good catches. Michael Bishop is prone to doing stuff like that, and he got away with it against Winnipeg where he threw into coverages where his receiver is going out making plays, but not against that secondary of the Lions. And I guarantee you this, that if he tries it again, the Lions will all week, they'll preach, and Wally said it right after the game, that it was very, very frustrating for them to make those plays when they have the right play called defensively, and that should be a turnover or a knockdown ball at the very least. And he said it wouldn't have been close, the game, if they would have done that. And he was right. If those guys make those plays in the secondary, the game's over a long time ago. And that's got to be the thing that he preaches to his defense all week, is when you get an opportunity to make a play, make a play. Because he is going to throw up his share of prayers, hoping that his receiver makes a play for him. How often do you see Michael Bishop put together 8, 9, 10 play drives? Not often. He's not that patient. He wants to use that arm of his and push the ball downfield, and that can get him in trouble, and it did Saturday night. He didn't show the patience that he needed.
How excited are you for the game on Saturday, Julian?
Very. You know, I'm a big fan of going to Saskatchewan. I know people might find that hard to believe, but I love going to Regina, especially this time of the year. They love their football. This team is the talk of the province, obviously now in first place in the West. And I'm sure this rematch is going to be have the town buzzing, and it's going to be a lot of fun to go back there and you know, sink our teeth into it and be a part of that atmosphere, which is always great. They love their football no matter what the weather is going to be, and they're going to be in for a hell of a football game, because the Lions, if they can take both of these games, they put themselves right back into the mix. And if Saskatchewan loses this one, man, they're bringing everyone back to the pack. So it'll be a lot of fun, Darryl. I'm sure it's going to be another entertaining affair.
So the key to the game, though, Joe, we've gone through it, but what does BC have to do to pull this one out?
Well, they have to, again, win the line of scrimmage, and I said that before. They if they can create time for Buck Pierce, he's good enough and patient enough that he's going to take what that defense gives him and move the sticks. And defensively, if they can continue to get after Michael Bishop and disrupt that offense the way they were able to, then, you know, you can see a similar outcome. But weather is always a factor in Regina, especially this time of the year. And really, the one guy that they continually have to stop is Wes Cates. He really is one of those guys that just seems to be able to make something out of nothing. And he's the heart and soul of that offense, and if you can take him away and put the game into Michael Bishop's hands, I like the Lions' chances.
Because just to mention this again here, is if BC wins this, they get Hamilton at home next week. They've still got two games versus Toronto.
If they can win on Saturday, then you got Hamilton at home, and then they go to Toronto for their first game back against the Argonauts. And the Argos, who knows, the way they're going right now, and Don Matthews, I don't know if you heard today, but they've benched Kerry Joseph and Cody Pickett,
yeah,
who's thrown, I don't know how many passes, is going to be their starting quarterback. So I don't know what they're doing there, but they feel that Pickett gives them a better chance than Kerry Joseph, than you know, all the power to you. So it'll be interesting to see down the road what they're able to do with him.
Where did Cody Pickett come from? Where have I heard of him?
Well, he played at the University of Washington.
Okay, that's
and
it.
And
yeah,
was a seventh-round pick of the San Francisco 49ers
in
2004.
Yeah.
And kind of bounced around a little bit. He's a big prototype. He's 6'4". He's 220 pounds. And here's the thing that I was reading today, was he's a guy that, you know, was able to move the sticks against Winnipeg. Well, you know, there was 10 minutes left. That game was already blown out. And to, you know, put a young kid in there, probably against a defense that's not really wanting to show very much and playing pretty basic, and for a guy to come in there and move the sticks, well, that's probably pretty easy.
Yeah.
But it'll be very interesting to see what he's able to do against Calgary in that defense this week.
And last one, Julio, Casey Printers, the Ticats had the Eskimos on the rope. They end up blowing it. Casey Printers, 14 for 30, 213 yards, four interceptions in that
game. Yeah, and that was a story of both quarterbacks, really, because I know that Ricky Ray did not play very well as well. The turnovers just were going back and forth. But, you know, Casey's Casey, right? Until he is able to change that and you know, eliminate turnovers, you're just not going to win games. And I will say this, that one of the things that really jumped out at me, Daryl, is this, that he did not look like he was in shape.
Really? Eh?
And what I mean by that is, if you watched him run around out there, he looked tired. And he had over 100 yards rushing, which is great, but you could really tell, like, he was lumbering at the end of how tired he was. And that affected the way he threw. Because he was so tired from running the ball, that he, you know, his mechanics were terrible, and that's, you know, the ball was going all over the place on him. And it really, and I was watching the game upstairs with Steph Kruk, who's you know, the quarterback's coach for the Lions, and he said the same thing, that he looked tired and out of shape, and that's what was affecting his mechanics. And so, you know, as Casey Printers goes the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and until he starts to turn things around, they're gonna flounder. But if you want to look at the glass half full, they're not that far out of a playoff spot, and that's the scary thing. If they can string together two or three wins, they're going to be right there, because everyone else in that Eastern Division is just floundering, except for Montreal.
Just where you feel for Casey a little bit is, it looked like if he was still on Kansas City, he might even be their starting quarterback this weekend.
How frustrated do you think he is?
Yeah.
To see that play. Somebody else playing down there, and he's probably thinking himself a year earlier if he would have been able to do it. He'd be in there right now.
Yep, no question.
Well, he's only got himself to blame, right?
Yeah.
It's one of those things that very nice. My little girl just put a tattoo on me.
You know, if you do convert to Judaism and that's a permanent tattoo, you can't be buried in a Jewish synagogue with a tattoo. Just so you know that.
I did not know that.
Just so you know.
Wow. Well, yeah, no, I had a big scare today with my little girl. I know we're getting off topic, but she fell off a slide today about 8 feet off the ground.
Oh, my.
Landed on her head.
And she got up.
So,
she's good.
She got up.
Huh? She got up. She's okay.
Oh, yeah, no, she got up. She landed in one of those. They're like all pebbles and stuff. So luckily for that, because if she would have landed on the ground, she would have really, really hurt herself. Oy. So I'm thankful today because, you know, we were close today to having something really bad happen. So, yeah, luckily she bounced up, and she's got a little couple of scrapes and a bruised eye, but she's going to be fine.
She's tough like daddy, eh?
She's tough. No, she's not tough. She's tough like her mom. I'd still be crying in the playground.
Daddy'd still be crying in the playground. But Casey Printers, it's true, though. He would be starting for the Chiefs.
Yeah, well, and here's the other thing. And I remember saying this to Bob Ackles, and we were talking about this during the exhibition season last year. And I said, you know what, Bob, you've been down there. Tell me, what, you know, is it safe to say that when you're Casey Printers, you're coming from Canada, you're nobody from nowhere, because that's what you are. I don't care if you're the MVP. In the NFL, you're from Canada. It doesn't matter what you've done. And because you look at what Ricky Ray did down when he went down to the New York Jets, right?
Yeah.
You have to get, when you get your opportunity in preseason, you have to show something. And you look at what Jeff Garcia was able to do when he went down to San Francisco. He was able to move around and make plays when he was running around. And then finally, I said, man, this guy can do it. But if you go down there and you don't make plays, then, you know, it's a hard struggle because, again, they've got nothing invested in you. You're not Brody Croyle, who they've drafted in the second round from Alabama and given $650,000 to sign and have given him a three-year contract. That's the reality, because when you're getting $20,000 to come down as a free agent, I mean, $20,000 going into the NFL, that's bus fare.
Yeah.
And they give that to anybody. They give it to people just to come down there just to be training camp meat, just to give them something to go. It's true.
Really, eh?
It's true. I know that I talked to Bill Quinter, and Bill Quinter, sorry, Daryl, for running late, but
no, I like it, yeah.
we had Bill Quinter used to be the director of player personnel here in BC, and now was a scout with the Seahawks and is now with the New Orleans Saints. I saw him at one of the games a little while ago, and he said the same thing. He said they're having a tough enough time bringing guys into training camp that are good enough to give them a look during training camp. That's how tough it is now.
Right.
So it's
what do you mean, to give their players
to give guys
a look?
To find athletic guys to come down there and give them $20,000 or $15,000 or whatever it is to sign down there, you know, they're not getting them. Because they're like, you look at a guy like Jason Claremont. Claremont could have gone down there. They're going to give him $10,000 or $15,000. He goes, why am I going to take $15,000 to go down there and get the hell beat out of me and then them to release me?
That, yeah.
So that's the nature of the business down there.
And there you have it.
There
so,
you go.
So, but what they do is they'll sign guys just to sort of have the other guys
sure.
be able to practice against
sure.
them kind of deals.
Absolutely.
What you mean?
Well, you
okay,
mean you got to fill out a roster. How many guys do they bring to training camp? 80?
Yeah, if not.
I mean, you got to have a, you know, there's a lot of guys out there that is just bringing them in just to line up and say, okay, let Dwight Feeney beat you up.
Yeah.
You know, it's true.
Wow.
But, you know, they're going to get guys lined up. They're going to get a lot of people lined up to go, but are they going to find quality guys? I don't think so. I think that's getting less and less.
Awesome. Julio Caravada from the BC Lions Radio Network. Julio, when are you off to Regina?
Thursday night, I think.
Enjoy Regina.
Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, have a good one,
Julio. Look forward to it.
Oh, that was Julio Caravada from the BC Lions Radio Network. Okay, folks, we're going to take a quick break when we're back. Tyler Noble, he is the sports director here at CITR. He is the play-by-play announcer for the – let's just see. Hello? I wasn't sure. The phone was ringing. You know, sometimes you hang up, it just rings. Tyler, sports director, he's also the play-by-play announcer for UBC Thunderbird men's football. Talk a little UBC sports after the break. Big win, huge win for the UBC men's football team on the weekend versus the University of Manitoba. All right, folks, you are listening to 101.9 FM.
The Advocacy Office provides confidential and free representation, guidance, and assistance to students engaged in conflict with UBC. We advocate for students in preparing and attending formal meetings, hearings, and appeals against the university. Specifically, our office helps students with matters of student discipline, such as cheating, collaboration, or plagiarism, assigned standing, admissions, and financial assistance. We can also assist you in appeals to decisions made by UBC Library, parking, or housing. You are not alone. We're here to help. For more information, call 822-9855 or visit the website at www.ams.ubc.ca/advocacy.
Hi, this is Burt Reynolds. You listen to Wiener's Barbecue, and they're not giving me a damn thing for this.
Okay, everybody. Welcome back to the show. You want to talk about Joe Flacco, do you? Are you there? Where'd you go? Hello?
Hello.
You're there now.
I'm here.
Hey, look at you. How are you?
I'm good. What's going on?
I'm just hanging loose. I'm a little tired today.
Why is that?
I don't know. I had a tough time sleeping last night. I was up late watching some DVDs. Let me ask you this. I have a question for you, okay?
Yeah.
I have a question. Okay, so I think my neighbor, she sleeps directly next to the wall where I have my TV, okay?
Right.
And, I listen to the TV loud. I admit it. And at 1:30 in the morning, she was constantly banging on my wall for me to turn the TV down.
Right.
What do you say to that?
Well, let me ask you something. The person who lives next door, is she like a younger lady or is she like an older lady? What do you figure? Have you seen her? Have you met her?
Yeah, middle-aged.
Middle-aged, like 40?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
And have you met her? Have you had like a conversation with her?
Yeah, I've had a conversation with her.
So you know each other. You have a rapport.
There's a little bit of a rapport, yeah.
But she obviously is incredibly annoyed by your loud television.
Yeah, absolutely. She's banging on it. You could hear it. Bang, bang.
Does the banging happen often?
Not totally often, but sometimes it does happen, yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're being excessively loud, I would turn it down. But if you're not, then that's, you know, that's sort of what you get for living in an apartment.
Yeah, like, I'm allowed to watch TV at 1:30 in the morning, if that's my choosing.
Yeah, absolutely you are. I mean, like I said, if you're excessively, loud, I would say,
and
you know.
And I'm not consistently loud either. I do it every now and then.
Right, so you're fine. That's called apartment living.
It is, exactly.
That's like, living in the city.
Like, my neighbor, she's loud a lot, and I went over there to get something one night, and, like, her friends were... They basically said, if you're here to tell us to shut up, get the hell out of the apartment. I wasn't right. there to do that, but that's sort of the attitude we have over there. She's
right.
loud.
And that's fine. I mean, that's how it is. That's what you get when you live in an apartment building. I mean, if somebody's excessive, then maybe you do something about it. But if it's just moderate, regular day-to-day stuff,
yeah.
what are you going to do? You know, to be honest, it's interesting. My former apartment, I don't live in an apartment anymore, but my former apartment, I lived on the second of three floors. So I had someone above me and someone below me, a lady above me and a younger girl below me. And the lady above me, like, walked really hard on her hardwood floor. It was hammering through my ceiling. And it was really annoying. And I used to hate that. And the girl below, I never heard her except for, you know, sometimes early in the morning or late at night having sex. And that's the only time I ever heard her. And it was, like, loud and, like, you know, intense.
So she was...
And I liked it. Like, I actually really liked it because I had actually seen her, and she was quite attractive. So I liked it. But it's amazing how, like, one type of noise drives you nuts, like walking on the floor, and somebody screaming, sexual orgasms, you know, you like that kind of disturbance.
Yeah, but what I find interesting...
It's interesting, right?
Yeah, what I find interesting about it is she was a quiet girl, a quiet, attractive girl, but she let out when she was having sex, is what you're saying.
Right, and, you know, it was cool. Like, I liked it.
Yeah, no, that's good for you. That's
yeah,
cool.
It was. It was a nice treat.
Yeah. With us, the former host, one of the former co-hosts of the show, a former CITR sports member, Sammy Goldman. Sammy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's nice to be back on the show.
Yep.
The reason I called in today is because, obviously, the NFL season started.
Yep.
And that's exciting for most sports fans, as the NFL is, you know, extremely popular these days, I think. I personally love it. I know you're a big fan also. But I specifically wanted to bring up a topic of conversation on your show and really on, you know, sports radio shows. I don't think... really comes up very often.
What's up?
And that's the Baltimore Ravens.
The Baltimore Ravens.
Because, like, you know, look, everyone likes to talk about the Packers and the Patriots and the Cowboys and the San Diego Chargers and all the teams with the big names. No one ever wants to talk about the Baltimore Ravens. Would you agree?
And up here they talk about the Seahawks all the time, and yeah.
The Seahawks, you know, it's just like the usual same old, same old.
Yeah.
And so I want to talk about the Baltimore Ravens today and just sort of dissect what's going on in their team. Well, what do you think?
Well, I mean, it's tough to get into because they had a game wiped out by Hurricane Ike.
Yes, they did. And, I mean, but look, the reality is everyone's two games into the season. The Ravens and, like you said, the Texans, I mean, are one game into the season. But let's talk Ravens football.
Let's go Ravens football. Okay. Well, first off, the running back situation seems to be a bit of a mess right now. You have Willis McGahee maybe coming back. You've got Ray Rice there. I don't know who the third guy is, but apparently Brian Billick's going to – no, it's not Billick. Who the hell's their coach?
Harbaugh.
Now?
John Harbaugh.
John Harbaugh is apparently going to go with a three-man committee, I read, in the backfield.
Yeah, no, he is. They have that that fella, I forget his name, also. But they're going to go with a three-man committee. They're wide receivers. They got a wily veteran in Derek Mason.
Yep, Derek Mason.
They got
Mason.
Demetrius Williams, a young up-and-coming receiver, as well as Mark Clayton, the guy who's sort of been around. He was highly touted, but he never kind of, you know, stepped up. He's had some good seasons, but really hasn't elevated into an elite receiver. And then they got this quarterback there, Joe Flacco.
Yeah, rookie Joe Flacco out of Delaware.
Fell into the starting role this year as Kyle Bowler ends up tearing up his shoulder and, you know, gone for the year. Troy Smith, they drafted a couple years ago, former Heisman Trophy winner, ends up getting some sort of viral infection. And he loses like 30 pounds and he's out of commission. Enter Joe Flacco.
Yeah, no, Joe Flacco, week one in the win versus Cincinnati, 129 yards. He has been confirmed by Coach John Harbaugh as the starter. Well, he was confirmed as a starter for last week, week two, so I assume he'll be the starter this upcoming week. But, yeah, Joe Flacco, rookie out of Delaware. Currently, Sammy, honestly, if you're going to vote for a Pro Bowl quarterback in the AFC right now, he's in the top seven or eight right now.
Yeah, he's in the top seven or eight. And if he's not in the top seven or eight, he's for surely, like, in the top 12.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the AFC, out of 16 teams, like, for sure, top 12.
And he's undefeated. You got to understand that, too, right? He's
1-0. And his longest run in the history of Joe Flacco took place in week one in the National Football League game.
Yeah, no, what do you mean? It was like a 50-yarder or a 45-yard touchdown?
38-yarder.
38-yarder.
But he had a couple of jukes in there, which, like, you know, kind of adds a little something.
Yeah, you know, 15 for 29, 52%. Yeah, Joe Flacco, I mean, what else is there to say? I haven't even seen him throw a pass yet, okay?
But he's serviceable. He's serviceable for the Ravens.
Yeah. Now, is he serviceable as a starting quarterback in a 12-team fantasy football league?
I would say probably not. What would you think?
Probably not, but I am going to go with Joe Flacco. He's my guy.
Okay.
He's my guy.
Anyway, so I guess that's our Baltimore Ravens report for this week.
Do you want to do it again next week, maybe? Another Baltimore Ravens?
Yeah, I mean, well, look, hopefully they're going to play next week. I mean, you know, they got disrupted this past week because of the hurricane. Hopefully nothing will kind of stand in their way.
Yeah, they got Cleveland coming to town this week.
They're going
to
play Cleveland. Tough divisional game. Should be a good one.
Yeah.
And let's see what happens. Let's dissect the Ravens again next Monday and see how they do in their performance against the Browns.
Yeah, no, I think we'll have a better time. We'll be able to get a little more in depth. I'd like to see what's happened to I'm not sure what's happened to the left tackle position ever since Jonathan Ogden retired.
Yeah, we'll look into it.
Yeah, we'll look
into
it.
And if any other callers out there have any really good information on the Ravens, I think they should call in and give their two cents worth, and, you know, we can continue this roundtable discussion of the Baltimore Ravens.
Sam, would you like it if I actually got to come on with us next week, a Baltimore Ravens writer?
Well, that would be pretty neat. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the fans out there would really appreciate that also.
Because we are, so what you're saying is Wiener's Barbecue becomes the official show of Baltimore Ravens football.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you need Baltimore Raven information, and you live in Vancouver, you happen to, you know, listen to this show over the internet, and, you know, you don't like the other Baltimore Raven coverage out there, this is a nice option for you on Tuesday evenings.
The Cleveland game. So is Baltimore going to beat Cleveland? What do they got to do?
Well, it's interesting. Baltimore is 1-0. Cleveland's 0-2. Cleveland is supposed to be a good team. I think that they're due for a win. They played Pittsburgh quite tight last week, and Pittsburgh's a pretty good team. You know, I'm gonna go Cleveland in this game. I'm gonna go Cleveland with the upset on the road.
Okay, there you go. I'll go Baltimore.
Okay,
I'll go Baltimore with a big game from Joe Flacco. And who else is the Derek Mason, my other guy.
Okay, good.
Yeah, that's what I'll go with. All right, so next week, 5:30, we'll have our next Baltimore Ravens report.
Sounds like a plan.
Okay, thanks, Sam.
Have a good show.
All right, everybody. We got to go take another break. We'll be back some UBC Thunderbird Sports. You're listening to Wiener's Barbecue on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, Canada.
Hi everyone, we're from the UBC Food Society.
Yummy.
And we're the only food club at UBC.
We're about feeding students, but also
hey,
teaching
Tyler.
Them how to feed themselves.
You ready to go?
Through our restaurant meetings and cooking workshops, we hope to expose you guys to the diversity of cultures, flavors, and food communities Vancouver has to offer.
So if you want to get involved, email us at foodsociety@gmail.com. Or check up on our website at www.ams.ubc.ca/clubs/foodsociety. Or you can even join our Facebook group.
Hi, I'm Bryant Reeves of the Vancouver Grizzlies, and you're listening to CITR 101.9.
Oh, got to turn the old microphone on. Always a important thing to do. You know that, Tyler?
Yeah.
No, I'd say it's right up there.
It's probably one of the most important skills in broadcasting, Daryl.
Skills?
To be able to turn on a microphone, yeah.
Skills.
Well, what would you call it?
I'd call it pushing a button. I call it pushing a button. With us right now, Tyler Noble, sports director here at CITR and the play-by-play announcer for the UBC Thunderbird men's football team, who had a big, big win. I can't remember the last time UBC football's had a win like this. They go into the defending CIS National Champions Manitoba Bison's home stadium. I believe it was Manitoba's home opener, their homecoming game.
That's correct, yeah.
This season, Manitoba coming off a loss the week before to Calgary, was it, Tyler?
That's right, yeah.
All right, we're on a roll so far. And Manitoba undefeated last year, winning the Vanier Cup. And what does UBC do? They go in and win the game 28-0. Flat out, Tyler, what does this mean for UBC Thunderbird men's football? I'm very surprised with that result.
I am, too. What's even more surprising is the fact that the Bisons couldn't get anywhere deeper than UBC's 43-yard line during the game. I think clearly this is a sign that the UBC Thunderbirds, as a team, really believe in themselves. They believe in each other, and they believe that they can compete with any team in this conference. And it's an exciting time to be a Thunderbirds follower, for sure, but there's still half a season to play, and it's hard to say what will happen.
And, Tyler, you know, stats, what stuck out for you? Who really stepped it up for UBC besides the field goal kicker on the weekend?
Yeah, well, Sean McIsaac going 7-for-7. He tied a record set by Matt Kellett back in 1996. But the running game has really been a big story for UBC this year. A lot of questions heading into the season about that with Chris Chinsky graduating and heading off to the Edmonton Eskimos. But Cheng Wei has really stepped up in a big way after spending a lot of time watching Chris Chinsky run the ball the last number of seasons. But Wei was great again on the weekend. He rushed for 100 yards. Total UBC net yards rushing, 141 to just 60 for Manitoba. So that is giving the Thunderbirds additional options on offense. And Mark McVay is just game by game settling in and being more accurate with his throws, developing good chemistry, in particular with Blaine Kruger. He's been getting most of the catches. And then there's the rookie, Spencer Betts, who's really stepped up in a big way and provided a contribution that I don't even think the coaching staff could have seen at this point.
Because, Tyler, I mean, you know, let's face it, UBC week one loses in SFU, and we'll get to the Clan in a moment here. What a win for them on the weekend. But week one, UBC loses to SFU, a team that hasn't won a game, and they've lost 25 straight going into the season opener this year. Week two, they are able to defeat Alberta, but, you know, I thought these were going to be, maybe they'd be lucky. I mean, I didn't think they'd have any chance this week against Manitoba, especially Manitoba coming off of a loss. But, you know, it was the whole thing. They play Manitoba this week, last week. They play Regina this week, who was 6-2 last year. Suddenly, Regina's sitting with an 0-2 record. They've defeated Manitoba, who's now 1-2. UBC 2-1. I mean, they're tied for first with Saskatchewan, Calgary, and SFU. I mean, is sky the limit right now for this football team?
Well, considering that the games that they have remaining are against all those teams they're tied with, certainly the sky is the limit, I would say. I mean, they've got two against Saskatchewan, including the final week of the regular season at home. They've got the Shrum Bowl, which is actually going to mean a heck of a lot this year for the first time in a while. University of Calgary coming up next weekend, not this coming weekend, but the following weekend. So, I mean, the Thunderbirds can finish as high as first. Second would still be a decent final position, considering what the predictions were for the team coming into this season. And, of course, you just got to finish in that top four to make the postseason. So.
And SFU, what did this win do to shake up the conference? 27-17 winners over Saskatchewan at BC Place on Saturday.
Yeah.
SFU, no wins since 2004. Suddenly 2-1 to start the year.
Well, when they beat the UBC Thunderbirds in the season opener, a lot of people had said, you know, great for SFU. Finally, they bumped the slump, but they were playing UBC, another team that a lot of the prognosticators thought would be fairly weak this season. One win you could call good luck, but to beat the number two ranked team in the country in the Saskatchewan Huskies and do so very convincingly is a sign that the Clan are for real. And as I mentioned earlier, that'll make the Shrum Bowl on October 9th quite interesting. So good for the SFU Clan as well to contribute to this newfound parity in the Canada West.
Give us the game this weekend. UBC taking on obviously will be hungry Regina Rams on the weekend. I'm sorry. Regina 0-2, a very good football team. They were 6-2 last year, but an 0-2 start to start the year. UBC 2-1. What's the matchup, Tyler?
Well, the fact that Regina is 0-2, I think, has to be cautioned a little bit because they played their first game against University of Saskatchewan, which is widely considered to be the best team in the conference. And then they played Manitoba. I'm not sure if it was in reversed order there or not. But Manitoba and Saskatchewan are the teams that they played. So those were a couple of tough matchups. And head coach Ted Gavaya of the Thunderbirds believes that Regina may have the best team in the conference on paper. So certainly the Thunderbirds will have to watch out for complacency. That's maybe something, Daryl, that you and I didn't think would be something they'd have to worry about this season. But complacency will be something they got to be careful for on Friday night, especially since the Rams are coming off a bye week. So they've had a lot of time to regroup, heal some injuries, and prepare for the Thunderbirds. And Teal Orban, perhaps the best quarterback in the conference, and he's chasing a number of milestones, and he's looked good this season as well, despite the losses. So it will be a tough one for the UBC Thunderbirds for sure, but they're riding quite the wave of confidence right now, and when you have all three units firing, not just offense and defense, but special teams as well, you know, you're gonna do very well in a football game when you've got all three units firing on all cylinders.
What would you say? I mean, there's no betting in CIS football, Tyler, but would you put what kind of point spread would you lay on this game?
I wouldn't go more than 7, I think. I think it's going to be a very tight game. Mind you, I said that about
seven
the Alberta
for who?
Game,
seven
and it turned
for,
out to be a blowout. So.
Yeah, 7. You think UBC's favored by 7?
I'm not picking a favorite. I can't pick a favorite in this one, but I think a 7-point game is probably a reasonable prediction.
Yeah, but you're not laying a line.
Well, if you, I don't know. Let me say Regina by 7 then.
A 7
just
point?
Just because they have that bye week.
That's a big point spread, you know.
We've had a lot of surprises this season, Daryl.
Awesome. Tyler, let's go over without what else happened in UBC sports. Take us through field hockey and the two soccer teams.
Yeah, well, field hockey, they finally got their season underway. That's the women's field hockey team, just to clarify. They completed a 2-game weekend sweep of the Alberta Pandas with a 2-0 win on Sunday. They had won 2-1 over Alberta on Saturday. Second-year forward Elise Milosevic and fourth-year forward Katie McPherson got the goals in both games for UBC. Their coach, Hash Kanji, said they came out a bit flat on Saturday and that almost cost them the game, but they were able to make some adjustments in the middle of the park and neutralize the Pandas' strengths in the rematch. And so that sets them up with a 2-0 start to the season as they come back home to play the Calgary Dinos, a pair of games against the Calgary Dinos at Wright Field this coming weekend. So the game time's there, 1 o'clock Saturday and 2 o'clock on Sunday. And this year, just to note, three teams from the Canada West go to the CIS Championships because they are being hosted by the University of Victoria. So you can expect the Thunderbirds to be there, barring any kind of catastrophic collapse in their season. And the Alberta Pandas, who we just talked about there, they'll be looking to make a push for the CIS Championships as well. UBC, last year in Toronto, a much-publicized, disappointing fourth-place finish there, and frustrations over the field turf surface they had to play on. Well, that won't be the case at the University of Victoria this year, so the UBC women's field hockey team is certainly looking ahead and then feeling quite positive about what's in store this weekend, or this this season, rather.
Cool, and the soccer teams?
Yeah, well, the men's soccer team, they started off with a couple of surprising draws in week one, but playing some BC teams this past weekend, actually Thursday and Saturday, come up with a couple of victories. A 1-0 triumph over University of the Fraser Valley on Saturday. That followed a 2-0 victory over Trinity Western on Thursday. And UBC starting to come together after a bit of a slow start. This is the defending national championship squad from last season, so certainly high expectations for them. And, you know, it's interesting with this men's soccer team. The athletic director, Bob Phillips, had said that he figures maybe this team is even better than last season, that their championship season was somewhat of a surprise. So the Birds are at 2-0-2 after 2 weeks of play, and they're back in action this coming weekend against Calgary and Lethbridge out at Thunderbird Park. The match times for those games are 2:15 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. So That's the men's soccer story. And the women, they're also 2-0-2, just like the men's team. They took down Fraser Valley on Saturday, thanks in large part to the play of all-star midfielder Caitlin Davey. She found the back of the net twice en route to a 2-0 victory. They beat Trinity Western on Thursday as well. And they will be taking on Calgary and Lethbridge next weekend at Thunderbird Park as well.
Awesome. Good stuff, Tyler. And, of course, you will have that UBC Thunderbird men's football broadcast Friday night. Pregame show starts at 6, I'm guessing?
Pregame at 6:30 and then kickoff right at 7 o'clock sharp. And we're certainly looking forward to it. It should be quite the game. And UBC would have a chance to move into first place, albeit that would be barring the outcomes on Saturday, of course. But big opportunity for the Thunderbirds and a must-win game for the Regina Rams. If they go 0-3, their playoff hopes could be dashed.
Cool. Tyler, thanks for doing this. Have a good weekend.
You too.
Got to remember to turn him off and not me off. That's what has to be done. All right. That was Tyler Noble with a little UBC Thunderbird sports report. You're listening to Wiener's Barbecue on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Mike with Fletcher Head. He is going to be on with us in about 10 minutes' time. And there you have it. So, yeah, baseball. We're getting to that fun part of the year in Major League Baseball right now. And I am quite thrilled because I am one of those people on this planet who is a Los Angeles Dodgers fan. Wonderful time to be a Dodgers fan right now. They've got Manny Ramirez in there. It's a fun time of the year. They're winning when it counts. And they're currently leading Pittsburgh 6-1, and I'm feeling good about the Dodgers postseason chances this year. So they haven't won a postseason series since the great World Series win of 1988. I remember that. Is that considered a long time ago, Bryce? 1988. I was talking to a girl. She was my waitress at a restaurant yesterday, and I just seen that Burn After Reading movie. Right, you know that one? And I was telling her it was good and whatever, and da 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 da. And I was like, she was like, I don't know, got onto Star Wars, and I was recommending movies, and I recommended The Princess Bride. Okay? And I think she said, I've heard of it, but that was out before I was born.
That's a long time ago.
When was Princess Bride out, Bryce? 88, 89, 87? Outstanding movie, wouldn't you say?
Oh, it's a classic.
Yeah, you would say that's a good movie to recommend to somebody. Princess Bride. Is there anything wrong with The Princess Bride? I don't think. It had Andre the Giant, you know.
It did.
Yeah, he was quite great in it. Fezzik. Right? That was his name? Yeah, no. Big fan of that. So, I don't know how I got on that tangent. Ah, that's the last time Dodgers won the World Series. The Major League Baseball playoff race right now, Anaheim, of course, they're going to get in. Or L.A. Angels of Anaheim. What kind of stupid name is that, as they're now referred to? Chicago White Sox winning the Central, but just barely over the Minnesota Twins. They lead that one by 1.5, so that's a little race down the stretch. Tampa Bay and Boston. I mean, this is what's wrong with the wild card, okay? I mean, I think it's stupid, the wild card, but Tampa Bay and Boston in a big old race right now for first place in their division. But it doesn't matter, because whoever gets second place is going to get the wild card. So it's just stupid. National League, the Mets currently only hold a half-game lead over Philadelphia. They're in a bit of a fight. Philadelphia, they're in a tie with Milwaukee, who actually just fired their manager today. So two of those three teams will get in. And that's the races now, is between the Mets, Phillies, and Brewers, two of the three teams get in. The Cubs, they're 8 up. They look like they'll get into the series. And the Dodgers, 4.5 up on Arizona. They're on fire right now. Manny has just been outstanding for the Dodgers. The Cubs, that's kind of the sentimental team. And you know what? I completely disagree. I don't know why anybody would root for the Cubs. They lost me as the lovable losers with Steve Bartman forever. Because they if they were such lovable fans, they wouldn't have acted like they did to that guy. Is that a fair statement, Bryce? And also, you know, everybody says how the Cubs, you know, haven't won a World Series since 1908 and da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, there's a reason they haven't won a World Series in 100 years, is they almost cheated winning that World Series in 1908. As the story goes, it was a giant pennant race at the end of the year, one of the great first great pennant races in baseball. 1908, Chicago Cubs and the New York Baseball Giants, New York Giants at the time. And it was the end of the season. Playing at the Polo Grounds. That's where the New York Giants played back then. Picture this. Okay. First and third, 2-out tie game, bottom of the ninth. That's the situation. The Giant guy, I believe his name is Fred Snodgrass, gets a hit to the right center field. Ball rolls all the way to the wall. The guy got from third comes in and scores. Giants win the game. Fans from the field. Everybody's happy. However, here's what happened. Fred Merkel, the guy on first base, sees the ball hit and sees the crowd jump the fence. Everybody runs on the field. His initial thought is, I got to get out of here to save myself. So he runs to the dugout. However, he failed to touch second base. Well, there's a runner at first. There's 2 out. Okay. Guy on third scored, but Fred Merkel still has not touched second base. So based on the rules of baseball, Fred Merkel is still in play. So this guy, Johnny Evers, figures it out. Big chaos, huge amount of chaos trying to get that ball. Ends up getting it, jumps up and down on the base, and declares Merkel out. Well, here's what happened. The league actually declared the game a draw, okay, to be made up at the end of the year if needed. Well, what happened in that last week of the season? It was a draw. They tied the Giants and the Cubs. They had a one-game playoff. Christy Mathewson started for the Giants, I think it was. He got hit. Mordecai Three Finger Brown came in out of the bullpen for the Cubs, pitched a beauty. Cubs won the game. Cubs won the World Series that year. Haven't won it since. That's my story. All right, everybody. I've told it before. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to the show. I'd like to thank my guests, Julio Caravata, BJ Bass, Sammy Goldman, Tyler Noble. And that's it. And you, the listener. Okay, Mike with Fletcher Head is going to be on after me. I'm going to play a little Broken Social Scene song. Just one song. It's 5:55 right now. Play the song. Time Mike's here. Time for his show. Okay, that's it for me. Thanks for listening. Have a great day, everybody.
Your way. Couldn't see it any other way. Give it your life, boy. I couldn't see it any other way.